Yemeni opposition has rejected a new power transition deal offered by the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. The new GCC initiative sees President Ali Abdullah Saleh first signing the deal as the chairman of the ruling party and then as president. The opposition insists that Saleh should sign the deal as the president only. The chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court has sought arrest warrants for Libya's leader, Muammar Gaddafi, his son, and the Libyan intelligence chief. Luis Moreno Ocampo accuses the three of crimes against humanity for their role in the crackdown on anti-regime protesters. Libyan officials have denounced the move. Also in Libya, NATO has carried out fresh airstrikes in the capital, Tripoli, striking the country's interior ministry. Two explosions rocked the capital's Bab al-Adhiziya neighborhood. The area houses the country's leader, Muammar Gaddafi. The district was also targeted earlier on Monday. The head of the International Monetary Fund has been denied release on bail on charges of sexual assault. Based on the New York court's ruling, Dominic Strauss-Kahn will remain in custody for the duration of his trial. He has pleaded not guilty to the charges. The U.S. Navy is developing a new generation of drones it aims to use in Asia. The aircraft carrier-based drones are crucial to the U.S. military as it tries to counter China's growing might. The sea-based drones will increase the range of U.S. intelligence and surveillance operations in the region. Italian Premier Silvio Berlusconi's center-right bloc has suffered setbacks in local elections. Berlusconi's alliance is set for a runoff in Milan, a power base for the embattled premier. His opponents have also retained control of other key cities, including Turin and Bologna. Berlusconi is currently fighting a sex scandal and corruption trials. Hundreds of anti-racism protesters have taken to the streets of the Greek capital, Athens. About 500 people gathered outside the city hall to protest against a spate of racially motivated attacks in the city. At least 25 people were hospitalized after far-right protests. Protesters that has chased and beat immigrants last week. A 5.9 magnitude earthquake has rocked south of Java in Indonesia. The epicenter of the quake was more than 700 kilometers southeast of the capital, Jakarta. There were no immediate reports of casualty or damage. Indonesia sits on the Pacific Ring of Fire, where seismic and volcanic activity is frequent.
Welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Taghwaye. In this news analysis, we're going to take a close look at the International Criminal Court, otherwise known as the ICC. Well, it's a tribunal which prosecutes individuals for genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and the crime of aggression. So why hasn't it taken a stance on Yemen, and Bahrain for that matter, as it has done with Libya, in which it requested arrest warrants for Libya's ruler Muammar Gaddafi, his son, and spy chief? Well, in this news analysis, we'll be discussing why this apparent double standard approach by the ICC, especially in the midst of the Arab Spring, where rights organizations have reported extensively on abuses taking place in these countries.
The office was able to gather direct evidence about orders issued by Muammar Gaddafi himself, his second eldest son, Saif al-Islam, is a de facto prime minister. And al-Sanusi, Gaddafi's brother-in-law, is his right-hand man, the executioner.
The ICC chief prosecutor said Gaddafi uses his absolute authority to commit crimes in Libya. Moreno Ocampo said he's also documented meetings held to plan operations against Gaddafi's opponents. Libyans have reacted to the news.
But why they just dropped two or three names, Gaddafi, Saif, and Abdullah Senussi, which is, they are very, very important members in there, but we would like to see the whole family also. The rest, and the mother Safiya, and Aisha, and Khamis, and...
Many ask why the court has failed to take similar measures with regards to the Saudi-backed crackdowns on popular uprisings in Yemen and Bahrain. The forces loyal to the Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh have been killing people in broad daylight since the revolution against the regime began in mid-February. The Bahraini regime has also bloody hands, using deadly violence to silence dissent. International lawyers have already filed a lawsuit against the ruling Al-Khalifa dynasty over its atrocities against its own citizens in the small Persian Gulf Sheikhdom.
Okay. We have met Mr. Dolan, the head of the Office of Investigation, and we expressed to him what is happening in Bahrain. He was very... He felt with this case, he said that he knows that what is happening in Bahrain is something against law.
Reports say the U.S., Britain, and some other Western countries are preventing the Bahrain dossier from reaching the International Criminal Court. And this is yet another indication of double standards practiced by the U.S. and its allies when it comes to human rights violations by their friends in the region and elsewhere.
Some good questions that are raised there, especially regarding the Arab uprisings. Well, we're going to get into that. First, let me introduce our guest. We have from London, Lizzie Cocker, who's joining us. She's a journalist who specializes in international affairs. From Beirut, international lawyer Franklin Lamb joins us. And rounding up the list from Chicago, Stephen Lendman, writer and radio host. Thank you all for joining us in this news analysis. Well, let's get right to it. You have the Arab uprisings, you have dictators, as they're called, directly or indirectly, that are committing human rights violations. So let me go to you first, Lizzie Cocker. Why is it that Libya is leading the pack in the reaction that it has gotten from the ICC, in which it has recommended arrest warrants for the ruler, his son, and the spy chief?
Hi, thank you for having me. It's good to be here. I'd go further than saying that the International Criminal Court is complicit of double standards. The International Criminal Court is a tool of Western imperialism, and in Africa and in the Global South in particular, it's actually known as the African Criminal Court, and this is where Libya comes into this as an African country. So what it's doing at the moment is very clear, and it is clearly just continuing the US and Europe's imperialist character and assassination of Gaddafi and his government. Now, what is the ICC? Since its creation 7 years ago, why has it only focused mainly on African states, in particular Darfur, the Congo, and Uganda? And now it is focusing on another African nation. Where is the ICC? Where is the ICC when NATO just the other day bombed Brega in Libya and killed 14 civilians, including 11 clerics who were there on a peace mission? Where is the ICC's arrest warrants when black Libyans are getting lynched and murdered publicly and chopped up? Where is the ICC just yesterday when Israel was opening fire on Palestinians and Lebanese and Syrian civilians who were protesting for the right of return of Palestinian refugees? And if the ICC is so concerned about states' repression of its own civilians, then I would invite the ICC here to England, where over the past 10 years, 400 British civilians have died in police custody, including most recently the death of famous reggae star Smiley Culture. So it is clear that the ICC is a farce. It always has been a farce, and Gaddafi and his government are right to say that they are going to ignore it. And really, you know, the ICC has no power to enforce its powers, because okay, it is not recognized widely across the world, including by half of the African continent and the US itself, for different reasons from why Libya doesn't recognize the ICC, which is interesting in a different way. So
well, let me get some answers to your questions there that are very well put. Franklin Lamb. I mean, where is the ICC? Is the focal point of Lizzie Cocker there. But before that, let's look at the ICC. She mentioned about when it was created 7 years ago. Well, what helped ICC in its creation were the NGOs, these human rights organizations, of which we can mention Amnesty International, we can mention Human Rights Watch, both to have reported extensively, and I like to put the focus on Bahrain. They have come out time and again, almost on a daily basis. So, what has happened there? Why is it that Bahrain's case has been ignored by the ICC?
Good. Well, I don't want to be argumentative, but most of what our friend from, a colleague from London said, look, the court has procedures and rules, and there's some major problems with the court, but you can't condemn the court for what happened yesterday at Maroun al-Ras, where I was. You can't condemn the court for certain instances that took place in Britain that they have no jurisdiction over. There are, you know, rules and procedures under Article 25 of the Rome Statute. Ms. Hansa filed supposedly a case there, but we've got to be honest about this. She submitted some photographs, and she said that's the case. No, there's got to be a higher quality. There's an obligation on all of us, if we're going to go to court, to have our facts straight and to follow the procedures. So to that extent, I think I'm defending the ICC. But it hasn't been real productive. They've had major staff problems there, as you know. There have been several resignations. They've got to get their act together. But what is a clear case, a very clear case, is exactly what you mentioned, the case of Bahrain. That's a case that ought to be, that must be before the court. It has devolved now into essentially ethnic cleansing. If you read today's Counterpunch, Patrick Colburn lays it out. They are attacking the Shia. There's no question about it. Saudi Arabia has declared war on the Shia majority in Bahrain, and that reeks of ethnic cleansing, and that reeks of, you know, huge crimes that have got to be addressed, not just by the ICC. I think the ICC will take that case once Ms. Hansa tightens up her pleadings, so it is a real case. Right now, it's some photographs and it's an information. And that's nice that she went there. But if we're going to use that court, we've got to, you know, have a solid case. And Bahrain is one. I think there'll be another case filed before the ICC that'll get a better reception than hers has had. There's a case pending now by six American lawyers in the U.S. Federal District Court in Washington that I think is going to really lay this case out. They are filing as part of their case 700 some documents. If the ICC thinks they don't have enough information. They've got information about Gaddafi, but they haven't got information about Bahrain. They're going to see a record that is going to lay it out. So I think the ICC has got to come clean and address some of these problems. They're obviously having serious internal structural problems, some of which are similar to the STL in The Hague.
Well, let's look at Bahrain in terms of an extension of it, Stephen Lendman. I mean, I'd like to focus in on Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is kind of unique, isn't it? I mean, you have a country that has a history of arbitrary arrest. You have torture there, unfair trials. You have all these punishments. But it has franchised into Bahrain, and we're well aware of the rights violations as documented by, again, two of those organizations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and a bunch of other organizations. I mean, these are organizations that help the ICC in covering and documenting these cases. So why has there not been this human rights charter, per se, upheld for Saudi Arabia? And many of the cases there are standards, I should say, are standards that the United States and its allies have.
Oh, well, all good points and excellent guest today. Hello, Franklin. Franklin and I spoke this morning. I agree with all of that. Bahrain isn't targeted. Saudi Arabia is not targeted. Yemen mostly is not targeted. Why? Because they're members of the club. If you're members of the club, you can plunder, you can murder, you can torture, you can do anything you like and get away with it. But can I bring up the real war criminals? Bahrain and Saudi and Yemen and other tyrants in North Africa, Middle East, other parts of the world, they're pikers. They're small fry. They're almost inconsequential compared to the real war criminals, the Western ones, the country I live in, the number one criminal state in the world by far. There are volumes of evidence of U.S. war crimes in the last decade alone. I mean, we could go back decades before that. In the last decade alone, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Pakistan, and now in Libya, proxy aggression in countries like Somalia, partnering with Israel in its crimes against Palestine. It goes on and on and on. We're talking about millions of lives lost. Torture as official U.S. policy. I wrote about it. It's documented. I quoted right from the documents. Official U.S. policy, torture as official Israeli policy, right from the documents. I wrote about it. I quoted from it. Where are the war crimes being charged against these two countries? They are the most egregious I know. They dwarf all of the others. As bad as Bahrain is, as bad as the Saudis and the Yemenis and so on, again, they are small fry. But the members of the club and the boss of the club, of course, is America. Junior partners, Israel, Britain, France, the Western powers, Western European powers, they're the members of the club, and they can get away with anything they want. But Gaddafi is another case, and his son, and his intelligence chief, that's another case of targeting the victims, not the criminals.
Okay.
Let's go after the criminals.
Well, let's look
at the criminals wage.
I'm sorry, Stephen Lederman. Let's take a look at the UK. I'd like to get this question into our guest from London, Lizzie Cocker, because there are reports that the UK, they're trying to prevent Bahrain from being referred to the ICC. Now, why would the UK take a keen interest on that? We could talk about some of the arms sales that have been done. And most recently, I think the BAE chief, when asked about why were their arms, your arms, BAE equipment, let's just say, generally speaking, being sold to Saudi Arabia, and of course how it's being exercised in Bahrain, he said it's up to Saudi Arabia, it's not us, meaning the sale has to go through. But overall, why do you think the UK and its role in preventing Bahrain from being referred to the ICC?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd just like to absolutely agree with what Stephen just said about, you know, and actually what Franklin said about the targeting the ignoring of regimes who are clearly allies of Britain, like Bahrain, like Saudi Arabia. But I'd strongly like to agree with what Stephen said about the main criminals here being the West. And I have to disagree a little bit with what Franklin said about defending the ICC, because we have to be clear that the West gets away with its criminal actions through these Western institutions like the ICC and NGOs like Human Rights Watch. So William Hague today welcomed, you know, because the ICC has done this and has issued an arrest warrant, it gives our foreign secretary here in England the opportunity to welcome this. And the hypocrisy is really disgusting, because just in 2008 and 2009, where, you know, sorry, Franklin said we can't judge the ICC based on yesterday, but, you know, if we can't judge an institution based on its track record, then what can we judge it upon? And so what is its track record? In recent recent years, the biggest, arguably the biggest crime against humanity occurred in Gaza, when 1,400 Palestinian civilians, a large proportion of women and children, were massacred by the Israeli Defense Force. And in 2009, a British judge called for an arrest warrant for former Israeli minister Tzipi Livni. How did the British authorities react to that arrest warrant? They reacted with outrage. And what is the Conservative government, William Hague's government, today trying to do? They're trying to pass through legislation to give greater immunity to their allies, such as Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Let me comment on that and ask an explanation from Franklin Lamb. Franklin Lamb, obviously, we have to talk about the record holder of one who has broken UN resolutions the most. I don't have the count handy, but I'm talking about Israel, and therefore we have to bring the UN here. Tell us the relationship between the UN, the ICC, Israel, and why this has gone on for as long as it has, in terms of what they have done. And of course, I'm talking about the Israel-Palestinian issue here.
Quite. Well, the figure you're looking for, I think, is 63 UN resolutions, 63 that Israel is in violation of. And I agree with Ms. Coker from London. If she wants the conclusion to date that the ICC is a failure. Yes, it's a failure. It has not met the optimistic expectations. There's a chance it can reform. I'm not terribly optimistic that that's going to happen in the short term, but you know, we've got so little in terms of enforcement agencies for international law that we tend to grasp at entities such as the ICC, and we tend to, you know, put into them our hopes and wishes, and we're resoundingly disappointed because of, as we all understand, these institutions are dominated by the big powers. Getting to your question, absolutely. The United Nations has been hijacked. The Security Council, as Stephen has written about, is essentially now an instrument of American foreign policy. That wasn't the plan at Turtle Bay, San Francisco, when the UN was set up. Ahmadinejad of Iran is absolutely right. It's got to be reformed. It has now become an instrument of American foreign policy. The ICC is so weak and pathetic. I'm not even sure the U.S. is interested in it, but if it gets any power, they'll try to hijack that as well. So that's the problem internationally. The General Assembly may hold some hope because they're not so influenced and dominated by the veto power of the Americans. So I look to that, but ultimately it's people like your guests tonight and your station that have to go to the street and have to insist on change. It's not going to come voluntarily. It's a tough, it's a tough road.
Right,
but
right.
I don't see an alternative.
Well, let me bring in Stephen Lenman here. Stephen Lenman, I'd like for you to also elaborate a little bit for us, if you can, the case of Yemen. And along with that, and I'd like all of my guests after Stephen Lenman, the question I'm about to ask, and that is, we've slammed the UN, we've slammed the ICC, we've slammed the West, including the United States and UK, but where is this hypocrisy going to end, given that if there is a sign of hope, perhaps, based on the Arab Spring that has happened, when you have different countries in the region of the Arab world, Arab countries, that is, obviously the people have come out showing that they are frustrated, and then seeing these rights violations taking place, is there a sign of hope there? But first, if you can tell us about the case of Yemen.
Well, the case of Yemen, really, it's like Bahrain. You've got mass demonstrations daily on the streets. You've got terrible state violence inflicted against these people. People are being gunned down. They're protesting nonviolently, and they're being met by state repression, gunned down in the street. And again, I agree. Where is the ICC? Can I add another wrinkle as well? Post-World War II, especially, we've had marvelous international laws crafted. We had the UN Charter. The UN Charter reads wonderfully. The international laws like Geneva and so many others, rights for women, rights for children, rights for social justice, I've quoted from them so often. They're marvelous, but they're worthless because the great powers ignore them. They do whatever they want. So America gives Yemen a pass, but America does not give Libya a pass, or did not give Saddam a pass after he fell out of favor, or did not give the Taliban a pass after they fell out of favor, once they were in favor. Again, the idea is the club. If you're in the club, you can do whatever you want. You can mow down your people in the street so Saleh in Yemen can slaughter his people. No problem, unless America says, sorry, your time is up. You've got to go. We want another despot replacing you. That's exactly what happened in Egypt.
Okay.
And by the way, I wrote an article titled, Arab Spring Has Yet to Bloom.
Okay.
It's a wonderful notion, but
I'm sorry to jump in. I'd like to get a reaction from both of my guests. Lizzie Cocker, in 30 seconds or less, is the Arab Spring going to prove at least that there's a sign of hope to come, given the violations that have taken place in some of these countries, at least in reflection of what the ICC and the UN are designed to do?
I'd just like to highlight, actually, that, you know, Stephen just, you know, rightly mentioned that the protesters in Yemen were unarmed, and in Libya, the so-called rebels in Libya, pretty much from the outset, were armed. Why was that? That's clear because from the beginning, there's been Western involvement in that rebellion. From the very early days, why were there SAS soldiers on the ground? And I'd just like to come back to this thing about the ICC and or reforming these institutions. I have no hope in these institutions of the West to bring anything good to the global South or the developing world.
Franklin Lamb, word here. I'm sorry, Lizzie Cocker, lack of time. Let me bring in Franklin Lamb for a closing statement. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, the institutions are only as good as we are and only as good as we insist that they be. So ultimately, it's our responsibility. But with respect to the Arab Spring, yes, I think it's going to continue. There'll be some efforts to hijack short term. But again, it's up to the people in the streets throughout the Middle East. And I have confidence because I saw yesterday the change in the Palestinians on the way to Marun al Ras and what happened there. 70,000 Palestinians, 28% of every Palestinian in Lebanon was down there at the border.
Okay.
And I think that we're going to have a new intifada, and the future is bright for the Muslim and Arab awakening, I believe.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we ran out of time. So much more to talk about. Franklin Lamb, international lawyer there from Beirut. Thank you very much. Lizzie Cocker, thank you. Journalist specializing in international affairs
from
London.
Thank you very much.
And Stephen Lemon, writer and radio host there from Chicago. And thank you for watching. Newsroom at PressTV.ir is our email address. Do send us any questions. We'd love to hear from you. From Mikava Tahway and the entire team, it's goodbye. We'll be right back.